Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. The show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative. This episode is sponsored by the Finest Service Organization, a provider of line-of-duty death home protection through many of our POCUA institutions.
And now for part two of hiring practices in public safety.
Yeah, we are definitely on the same page because I've never worked in a firehouse, but with any team, and I've seen this for, close to 30 years, and, teams are teams, you build a certain dynamic, and you bring somebody new onto the team, you automatically change that dynamic, And I think that it tell me if I'm on to something here is at the end of the day, I know that there's kind of a family friend component in the firehouse because you're so close, you're sleeping with each other, not being with each other, but in close proximity.
I don't even think that out. There are stories. Not mine.
Yeah. But, you're eating together, you're in the same house. But, when you have a family culture, while it's warm and nice, it has some negative pieces to it, where even in business, many times people use the analogy, we're not a family, we're a sports team. We don't have to go out for a beer, but we need to get this job done. And when it comes to a firehouse, you add somebody on because they have the IQ and the physical ability to really do the job, but, could create a ripple effect in that team that is a real hindrance on the job. I mean, you have to be able to trust, not just physically and intelligently to be able to know what you're doing, but to have the character to do the right thing. Yeah, I'll use a very quick story from a police friend that I have. He told a story many years ago where he was in a situation where the people were shooting and so forth, and they had a new officer, a lady that was on the job just a month or so, and she got so frazzled that she dropped her loaded gun and cried and went back into the car rather than backing up her people. Now, she might have she passed all the tests, obviously. She probably had the intelligence to know what to do. She physically probably had the ability to back these guys up, but just broke down. And you can't have that. Because that's dangerous for everybody in those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And and that means that, that kind of, you're kind of, that's a great segue, I think, in talking about what some of the fallout is of not hiring for character. And some of that fallout, it hits a couple of areas. One of the areas is cost, and I'll come back to that, but the actual cost, how it actually affects the budget, attrition rates actually affect the budget. It's, in academy, when you go off to fire, so we've hired you for good or bad. I actually have a friend who is in a large urban fire department. I don't want to give his title or anything because but the short story is, they're up there and was talking to me about their academies, and they typically hire 56 for each academy because they know they're going to lose 6, 7, or 8. I said, 6, 7, or 8 every time. So we'll get one out of injury, maybe two. What's happening with the other ones? Well, conduct, they maybe don't want, maybe they've decided it isn't their job or, whatever. Like, so let me get this straight. So when you hire 56, how many applications do you get against that 56? It floats somewhere between 1,250 and 1,500. So my argument is, you're telling me that out of 15, if we round it up and say out of 1,350 applications, you can't find the right 56? Yeah, you should be able to. And that includes the people that get to academy and say, well, maybe this isn't for me. They've done all these things. And it's pretty rare that by the time they get hired for Academy, that you're the first interview they've had. So they probably had a whole lot of interviews in there as well. And out of all that stuff, out of all that time and effort that candidate's put in, it takes them going to Academy to realize that this is not about my character. That should be caught early by us as well. So attrition rates in Academy, that's part of the fallout of not hiring for character. And then conduct issues. If they pass Academy, these are the knuckleheads that go to the downtown fountain with the engine and the strippers falling, you know, coming off of it for our Christmas photos.
I'm still trying to figure out, you know, where the problem is with that, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, I mean, you know, the drinking on the job, somebody's leading these people, somebody hired that chief 20 years ago. Yeah. So having that level of character where that chief either allows that to be okay or allows somebody to be wildly overweight but still doing this incredibly physically taxing job, or they get a DUI and, well, we've got HR stuff we've got to do, and allowing that level of culture, right? So conduct issues, which, I mean, between lawsuits and the time and angst that it takes to get somebody through the whole HR grind to eventually get rid of them, plus the rehire on the back end to fill their position if they're gone, massive costs.
Yeah.
Massive. I'm going to go back to Academy for a second and talk about, you know, trying to find the right characters out of that, you know, ballpark 1500 for 50 odd people. Start to finish, from the time we put out the application process, the announcement, to the time they are done their probation, which, you know, in the States is minimum of 12 months. I did 18.
Mm-hmm.
That's pushing the six figure ballpark, 75 to 100. The figures aren't necessarily out there, Ken. I'm digging in for some data.
Mm-hmm.
I found a bit of data on hiring practices with LA City. It's buried data. So I'm definitely struggling, trying to find that, but I'm definitely on the hunt and it's out there. One of the good things about the States is, you know, we've got NFERS, which is the National Fire Incident Reporting System.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same system that allows us to say, hey, in 2012, how many false alarms did ACADAC Wisconsin go on? You can do this and you can actually find it. Canada does not have that level. They're working towards, but they don't have that level. But even with that NFERS reporting system, there's not a lot of data out there about exactly how much it costs and what attrition rates are in academies and whatnot. I'm riding on a lot of anecdotal data. I'm hoping to get a broad enough, and I'm going to throw a survey out there as well, see what level of response I get to kind of get some harder data on it. But anecdotally, at least, Ken, it is that six-figure ballpark. And if that same, like I said, fire department that I'm using as an example, they're losing six people every academy, and they're running three academies a year. That's roughly 18 people every year that they're losing, either in academy or even somewhere in probation. If we're looking at that roughly, you know, 50 grand, that's, what is that? Is that 900 grand?
Yeah.
That's 900 grand. That's $1 million a year. I've had a 25-year career.
Mm-hmm.
If they've consistently done that, which I understand anecdotally, they do consistently, they've had the same process for the last 30 or 40 years. That means in my career alone, they've lost somewhere around $25 million just in not hiring the right people. Those are not perfect numbers. They're not clean numbers. I'm well aware of that, but I think it paints a picture.
Yeah. Yeah. You're clearly onto something. And, you know, I see this in the States probably a little bit more in law enforcement, than I do in, firefighting. But, you know, I remember, and this wasn't that long ago, I was sitting having a beer with my dad a couple years ago. And, you know, we were talking about law enforcement and some of the issues that we're having in the United States. And I talked to him, and he was never a firefighter or a police officer. He was a teacher for his whole career, but knew a lot of firefighters and police officers in the city of Chicago for some reason. And I mentioned, I said, yeah, to this, the same thing that we kind of started our discussion with is, you know, why are we not raising the level of a first responder? You know, where they're getting trained and paid at the level of a doctor or a lawyer, and that they're on this type of level. And, you know, he told me a story. He said, you know, I remember, you know, talking to friends of mine, you know, where they were, say, a police officer, or they work for the city of Chicago, and their son was, you know, getting ready to graduate high school. And they'd say, well, you know, I can get you a job for the city. You know, what do you want to do for the city? Do you want to work in sanitation? Do you want to work in the office? Do you want to be a police officer? And I'm like, all right, you know, we're putting, you know, pushing paper and collecting garbage, you're at the same city level as a police officer, really? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, that, you know, I just, you know, that was the first time he ever told me that. I'm like, yeah, that's horrendous. Yep. I, you know, if I gotta say, you know, I'm gonna work for the city, garbage man, law enforcement, you know, really? nothing against garbage men out there. We need those folks, and I appreciate they do that job, but is yeah, you know, come on, man.
Yeah. We've got, you know, there's a movement. It's really being forwarded by the Leadership Under Fire Institute, and they have an initiative. They've done a good amount of work with the FDNY with their mental performance initiatives, and part of that is the recognition that police and fire are what's called a mission critical team. So mm-hmm. It used to be, you know, Navy SEALs, that's a mission critical, Army Rangers, that's a mission critical team. There's a very formal definition of what mission critical teams, right? It's a limited number mm-hmm. of people, usually 3 to 7. They've got a limited amount of time to complete an objective, and they operate in high consequence arenas, right? Mm-hmm. Navy SEALs, that's very obvious. You know, but police and fire, it's obvious, it's also very odd. You know, right. You run a lot of, you know, you do traffic stops and you do, you know, wellness checks, but you also, and then 5 minutes later you're in a gunfight, right? Or or the same thing with us. You know, I've gone on backaches as a paramedic, fire medic, mm-hmm. And then a half an hour later make an entry in the front door on a fire. So you never quite know. It's not quite as clear as some of those high performing military teams, but we are still considered mission critical teams. Sure. And when we start framing the team members that make up mission critical teams, it once again furthers the thought. I mean, think about what it takes to become a SEAL,
mm-hmm.
right? And every SEAL that has succeeded, then made it past Hell Week, and the, I think it's 6 or 8 months of all the sure. training aside from Hell Week. And they all talk about, yeah, we end up, you know, we're all yapped out and our biceps are big, that from the sheer work, but it has nothing to do with physical. It's all about mm-hmm. this and this. That's the one that gets you through, right? We're not doing that with police and fire.
Yeah.
Have your resume, have your certifications, answer these mundane interview questions. We need to frame them like they are mission critical team members.
Yeah. So as we begin to wrap up a little bit here, yeah. you know, give me the silver bullet. You know, what's the answer to all this? You know, you're a sharp guy, Chief Dave. You know, what's that? You know, what's snap our fingers and make this change and turn everything around to where it needs to be?
If I had a magic wand,
yeah,
I would
or a magic axe, whatever.
Or a magic axe, you know. I wish I had like an effect, like almost a LeBron James who does the chalk. I wish I had like a magic pixie dust effect come off the
action. Yeah, well, LeBron stole that from Michael Jordan. But anyhow, continue.
Oh, that's right. He did. Off camera, I'll tell you a quick LeBron story.
okay. Well, if not a silver bullet, because, you know, I was half joking on that. You know, is there, you know, a number one tip or a couple of things that any public safety department, you know, could be doing and actually implement fairly quickly that would make at least somewhat of a difference.
Yeah. If by chance a chief or chiefs are watching this, is I would challenge them to finish the podcast, turn it off, sit down on the computer and call a meeting and say, you know what? This is ground zero. This is point zero where we are now going to take a serious look at our 7-year-old interview questions. Mm-hmm. We're going to start looking at whether or not do we bring in a citizen, maybe a citizen of very high EQ, but a citizen into the interviews. What training can we do for our interview panel, like City of Vancouver? And there are others out there. I just brought up that one city. Let's get past those same bloody questions, those same 15, 20, 25 questions. Let's actually take a serious look at what it is we want filling that uniform beyond what's being shown on TV. Mm-hmm. And, oh my God, here's a news clip about this firefighter hero, right? Let's fill that uniform with people that are of high moral standing, that are made up of strong moral character, mm-hmm. that do the things that are decent and right, and they do it all with resilience and grit. Let's find those people. I don't think it's hard. Take a look at the number of resumes that end up in your inbox versus how many that you hire. We've got them in there. We're just passing them over.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the change begins at that chief level, in that, yeah, I see here in the States that, yeah, and ironically, I'll try not to ramble here, but I listened to a TED talk not too long ago that talked, basically, I'm paraphrasing, at how much government hates and tries to avoid and slow down change. Yeah, that, you know, that they like their process and this is how it's been for 20 years, so we're not going to change this because then it'll mess everything up. And I see that especially in law enforcement here. But what I'm also seeing, fortunately, is at the chief level, you know, some of these chiefs that are getting into leadership roles that, you know, understand, you know, the mental and psychological piece, you know, to these jobs, and aren't just, while we still have some of them out there, aren't just saying, you know, okay, you know what, you had a bad day, go have a beer, come back, you know, on your next shift, you know, and get over it. Cause, you know, and frankly, you know, maybe for some people that does work, but for others, it doesn't. Right. So I think that change, and at least looking at, all right, let's maybe we need to change, maybe we don't, but let's take a close look at this before we just blindly continue down this path.
Yeah. Yeah. Frankly, I think the minute that a chief fosters a culture of maybe we don't need to change, mm-hmm. is the minute you start lapsing back into complacency. Yeah. We all need to change. It doesn't matter. It, you know what? The way I cut the bloody lawn sometimes needs to change. We all need to change. But going back to, we're hiring mission critical team members. It's not 1954. We're not hiring Uncle Joe's son anymore.
Right.
And we shouldn't. And, you know, and there's liability issues behind that as right. well. But we're not doing that anymore. Right.
Yeah.
We say culturally, we do hire for character. And I'm back to what I said in minute one. We hire for character. Here's your crappy interview questions. Right? I just want to, and this might be a finish off, I'm not too sure, but one of the ways that you make government move is you put a dollar sign in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep. And that's why, Frank, I'm putting the onus on me to try to find the data that gives some numbers to it. What does it really cost us? When we lose somebody.
And you know what, that
just...
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
But yeah, that is one of the tactics I see A lot of organizations put forth, you know, especially I can rattle a few of them off, like Yoga for First Responders is one that comes to mind, you know, which is okay, you know, yeah, it's going to cost X for this type of training, but yeah, you know, what is it costing you in, you know, injuries and psychological issues, da 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 da. You know, how much does that cost you? You know, why don't, yeah, it, fortunately, you know, in the United States, and I see this in the healthcare industry through my wife, is that fortunately, you know, some people are actually getting a clue, which is, you know what? I would rather pay X for preventative medicine and preventative techniques then have to pay Y, you know, because this person's in the hospital because we didn't do X. And I think
I love the way you frame that. I frankly, I never thought of that before. You know, if
I'll
you
send you a
look at it,
bill.
yeah. Well, okay. I'll tell you how much I can afford, and
Send me
you
a
know, yeah, okay, yeah.
biscotti, all right? Yeah.
No, if you frame it like looking at sound hiring practices, because again, I assert that we do not have sound hiring practices. If you frame sound hiring practices as a prevention measure, that's an interesting take on it. That's an interesting, I like that.
Yep.
I like
Well, feel free to
that.
use
Oh, I
it.
will. And I promise I won't put my name on that.
Well, who knows? Maybe someday we'll end up working together up there in Canada or in the States. But yeah, before I let you go, for those folks that are watching or listening that want to learn more about what you're doing, the great stuff that you're doing through FireEdge, how best can they find you?
I actually find that most of my messaging is through LinkedIn. Straight up find me, Dave Robertson. There's a few of us out there. It's a fairly common name. Funny enough, there is another Chief Dave Robertson that works 2 hours away from me. We've had crossed emails many times, but Dave Robertson with Lambton Shores Fire Department and FireEdge. I love that you asked that because it something else puts the onus on me for is to get my butt into gear and actually revisit my website. But you can find that, especially if you are someone that's looking to get into the fire service. But all my contact info is in there. If somebody wants to talk to me about this subject, and definitely look for me being far more vocal on this subject in the near future. I think it's where the fire service needs to go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I always have a great conversation with you
Yes.
before, during, and after the episode. Definitely everybody out there, check out fireedge.com. Look up Dave Robertson on LinkedIn. That's how I found him, as a matter of fact. Chief Dave, thanks for being on the show again, my friend.
Thank you very much. Dave Robertson, the sequel. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you again, and thank you to all of you who have either watched or listened to this episode of Public Safety Talk Radio. And we'll be back with you next week with another great guest.
Public Safety Talk Radio was produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.